Civilizations build institutions, often edifices, to house the bounty of human knowledge. In the West, the tradition began with the library at Alexandria, which housed the original works of Aristotle. Now, nearly all that is known in this world has been gathered up and installed in a constellation of great libraries, museums, and universities. In the 20th century, the gathering of knowledge has become both an art and an industry, as technology has made information more accessible to more people. But has the ready availability of information created smarter people? Were Americans, for instance, any smarter at the end of the 20th century than they were at the beginning of it? Vartan Gregorian is an educator and scholar, president of the Carnegie Corporation of New York. He is the former head of the New York Public Library and the former president of Brown University. He joins us from our studios in New York City. Mr. Gregorian, very good to have you with us. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for asking me.
Do people expect something different from education these days? Has it become, for some, more vocation-oriented, for example?
Well, education, as you well know, initially was conceived, as the term itself, educatio, to draw out what one had in himself or herself, as Plato put it. But since then, education has become, much is expected of education. One is training, one is knowledge for its own sake, one is preparing somebody for lifelong learning, one is to answer or to raise questions that are meaningful as to who we are, where we come from, where we're going. Plus, education is also supposed to prepare a good citizen, tolerant individual, obedient individual, enlightened individual. So we expect a lot from education.
What's the difference between a teacher, let's say 1950 North America, and a teacher at the beginning of the year 2000?
The teacher in the 1950s was taught for a certain way to teach certain things from a textbook, because knowledge was at least not knowing as fast as now. Mm-hmm. Now, that's no longer sufficient. A teacher is supposed to know the subject matter. He or she is supposed to know pedagogy. He or she is supposed to know about technology. They're supposed also to know and keep up with the major developments in their field of expertise. Otherwise, they'll become obsolete very fast. Because remember, the entire communication revolution, cultural revolution, pop culture, scientific revolution, all of this vicariously and so forth have inculcated lots of knowledge and information in the society. So the teacher also has to compete what already students know vicariously and build on it.
Has that been one of the big changes, the amount of what I'll refer to as, if you please, ambient information that's out there that people simply soak up? A lot of it, obviously, commercial in one form or another.
Yes, that's one issue. The other one is we know how to use things, but we don't know why they work. So that
the way we're talking now, for example, speaking for myself, a fiber optic line between New York and Washington.
Absolutely. And one of the things that the teachers have to do now is to translate not usage, but knowledge as to how things work.
Is the new technology that's emerging that literally delivers information at the speed of light, for the most part, an aid in that quest?
Well, this is a very peculiar situation we're in. With a touch of a fingertip, we can have more information than man has ever had in his lifetime. But if you're not educated, you don't have the right questions to ask, you don't know how to separate the wheat from the chaff, information is not going to be useful. Mm-hmm. I always told my students, who used to say, this is a free country, I can say anything I want. And I would tell them, if you have nothing to say, it doesn't make difference. If you have no curiosity, no way discerning what is a fact, what's a fiction, what's an opinion, what's propaganda, and so forth, it will not help you.
You were talking about how teachers differed in what they were considered to be and how they acquitted their jobs at the beginning, middle, and end of the century. What about students? How has the role, what it takes to be a student, changed?
Students are much more adult now, come to school with much more experience, much more traumatic experiences, abuse, loneliness, poverty, As a result, also, hopefully, their respect for teachers is not challenged as much as I think it's challenged, because in the 19th and 20th century, beginning at least until 1950s, until 1960s, teacher had an exalted position in our society. Of all the professions, I know that's noblest of all, because it deals with the future, it deals with potentiality. But gradually what has happened in our society, and students are aware of this, we value not who you are, but what you have more and more. And as a result, because teaching profession does not get well paid, comparing all kinds of sectors, so students are noticing teaching profession not to be an ideal profession for them to go to. To me, that's the most important profession one has to go.
Is it possible, as the 21st century progresses, Mr. Gregorian, that what we think of now as education will, although it will not disappear from our early lives, we will cease to isolate it there and think of education as something that we have to emphasize through the rest of our lives as well, and perhaps even a little more?
Well, you just said the most crucial thing, because education has to be conceived now as K to 16, not to K to 12, and even K to 18 in case of PhD. And I would say it has to be conceived now as a lifelong enterprise, because we're teaching in our high schools and in our universities how to learn for the rest of one's life. And the questions that we ask may not have answers, but we're spiritual, moral, rational beings, and we have no choice but to ask those questions, which have been asked for thousands of years. It's not the right answer that we will get, but we have an obligation and urge to ask the right questions. So it's going to become a lifetime learning endeavor and adventure, and that's good.
To parochialize the question for just a moment, there was a time early in the 20th century when you could count on tens of millions of Americans having some experience at reading the Bible, having heard at least a few phrases of Shakespeare in their lives, maybe Huck Finn at some point in school, and I don't know, seeing Lucy Ricardo's baby born on the old Isle of Lucy. Are the number of common experiences and points of knowledge we have decreasing in the expanding welter of knowledge?
It's very hard now to have the kind of common cultural text or vocabulary that ties the nation intellectually. But the other thing is, you only have 4 years in college to cover so many texts. Mm-hmm. Now, we would like you to know about American heritage. We would like you to know about the multicultural nature of America. We would like you to know about the Western Europe. We would like you to know about ancient Greece. There is so much to know now and so little time. So as a result, one of the things we should watch out that we do not transform everything into a Reader's Digest, in a not best Reader's Digest sense, but the worst Reader's Digest sense, namely have Milton Cross style renditions, 50 great moments in music when opening line is sufficient, but nobody will know what follows. Because the way we were brought up, at least I was taught, that the only thing you have to worry is your mind. Youth, beauty, fortune, everything is ephemeral. But the only thing that has no depreciation allowance is one's mind. And nobody can rob you from ideas, from insights, from the kind of inner joy and internal joy of being and becoming that culture and civilization and thinking gives us.
Mr. Gregorian, thank you very much for spending this time with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Vartan Gregorian is the president of the Carnegie Corporation, speaking with us from our studios in New York City.